Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Would you rather speak in rhymes for the rest of your life or have to sing everything you say for the rest of your life?
That's a great question. I feel like I sing a lot of things now.
Yeah.
Like, and I quote a lot of TikTok songs all the time. Yeah. So, but I feel like if I'm trying to be serious, because of my height, most people don't take me seriously anyways when I'm mad, aka like, my husband. Singing. Yeah, so if I'm like singing at them, they're gonna be like, are you serious? They'll just laugh at me. But if I speak in rhymes, I think they'll also just laugh at me. You know what? I'm gonna sing things. I'd rather do that than rhymes. Because what if I can't think of a rhyme and then I can't say what I want to say?
That was my question. Like, do I have to, like, does my brain do it for me, or am I sitting there like, what rhymes with that?
Yeah, I have a point to make. I need words to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll just sing things. I quote, I quote Bluey. I know you're a Bluey fan. I quote Bluey every once in a while. I'm like, can we get the bill?
Yeah.
Can we get the bill?
Way better than having to rhyme.
Yes. 100%. Singing. Yes. That's my vote. I'm going to sing everything. Not this episode, though. There's too much.
Fair.
There's no songs in here.
Nope. Not here.
Welcome to the Goodish Girls, guys. My name is Dallas.
My name's Alyssa.
And we are here to record the second to last episode of our Quicksilver deep dive. After this one, we only have one more.
That just made me really sad.
I'm not ready. I'm real upset. Neither. And then we just have a couple of months, and then we're going to be deep into Brimstone. Don't worry. We're going to deep dive it the same.
I'm so excited.
And we'll have a lot of questions answered and things known. It's going to be wonderful. I can't wait. Oh my gosh. Okay. Today we are going to cover chapters 39 through 41. And then that way we just have a couple of chapters to really deep dive into the ending. There's a lot of things that are wrapped up. There's a lot of things that happen in these ones. It's very fast paced. So let's get into it. We are starting with 39, Anorath Mor. We have heard this word before a lot, right? What it means. We've heard it a lot. It has its whole chapter, right? So in the previous chapter, if you haven't listened to the last episode for a little bit, Everlane attempts to warn Ceres about the water, but it was too late, right? So there's Ceres is thrown through a ceiling shadow gate and is dumped into a huge body of water, basically belly flopped in. She definitely has some ribs broken and some other issues as well. Girl is in pain. I would like to note that in this chapter, it is noted that neither Ceres nor Carrion can swim. Can Carrion actually swim? We don't know, because he was like, right, he swallowed too much water.
I would have to say no, because if he could swim, he wouldn't have swallowed too much water.
But he went first, right? He wasn't even given a pre-warning. So if he hit the water just as hard and he was just knocked out immediately, or like hit a rock or something.
That's the only thing I would argue, because if you can swim, you're not going unconscious. You know, like, he would have been back floating out there.
You think so? Just like lying on his side.
And he like fell out of the ceiling and was like, oh, water. He would have pencil dove in and back floated.
True. Do you think that Callie Hart knows the answer to that? Can Carrion swim?
Yeah.
If we ever talk to Callie Hart, I'm going to ask her if Carrion can swim.
I don't know. I'm going to say no, because no, and or he hit a rock.
Yeah, I think he just hit the water real hard and was like, out. Because he went first, and Ceres was like half warned. So she was like, ah. And then Lorth was fully warned.
How high up is the Shadow Gate from the water?
That's a good question. I think it was pretty high up.
Oh, it's water.
It was 10 feet above the table to the ceiling. But I don't think it tells us how much like above the water it was. But you're going fast enough through the gate that you hit the water body first at like full speed.
I'm trying to think if somebody like dropped me out of a box at 10 feet.
I think you'd be okay at 10 feet.
Yeah, I think you'd have enough time to be like, oh, water, and either pencil dive or even if you belly flop straight in. But I guess like if you're getting hurled out of a shadow gate, like if are you going like, what's it called? Something velocity? I feel so silly right now.
Oh, my. Oh, girl, don't quiz me. That's not my strong suit. Like,
maximum.
Maximum velocity. Centripetal force.
Yeah.
Science answers.
Terminal velocity?
Terminal velocity.
Terminal velocity.
See, I know that. I've heard that word. Good job.
There you go. Terminal velocity is the maximum speed you can attain while falling through the air. For a skydiver in a belly-to-earth position, this is a typically around 120 miles per hour. This speed is reached after about 12 seconds of falling, which is approximately 450 meters or 1,500 feet.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
But again, like maybe when you come out of a shadow gate, you're like hurled out.
Yeah, you're like flying through it. And maybe it was higher than 10 feet, right? Like my question is like, is the distance from the shadow gate to the floor on one side the exact same on the other side? Like, is it parallel?
I think we're getting too technical now.
We probably are. We probably are. Okay, you vote Carrion cannot swim. I think he can swim. I think everything they think Carrion cannot do, he can do 10 times better than he lets on. That's my vote. Maybe we'll find out in book two. Or maybe one day we'll talk to Callie and I'm going to ask her, can Carrion actually swim? Whichever one comes first.
Swift. Swim.
Can he swim? Question number 110 that we have for her. One day. So Lorth does find Carrion unconscious. He's in the water and he brings him out and he starts hitting his chest multiple times to get the water out, which I thought was a really interesting way to basically do CPR back when like CPR wasn't right. And they're not CPR in Fantasyland.
He's like, I'm not putting my lips on this guy.
Right. Like they don't really talk about it in depth, but I was like, oh, that's a fun way to complete it, right? Because he's just hitting his chest. He's not like putting his hands on, like pushing, counting to 30, that kind of stuff. No, he's like hitting it until the water comes out. Right. Exactly. So I was like, oh, that's cool.
You know, like on TV when they just like pow right on the chest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they're fine. And he was okay. Before that's frowned
upon in the medical community, by the way.
Yeah, don't hit people like that. If you don't know CPR, take a CPR class.
This is a science lesson, this week's episode.
Well, we are CPR certified, but we are not CPR instructors, so I can give no medical information or instructions.
I'm not doing a cardiac thump on anybody.
I like that you knew the words, though, to that one. That's pretty cool. I did not know that.
I'm a big Grey's Anatomy fan.
That's fair. You know what my fear is? That I'm going to be at a restaurant and that one day I'm going to have to, like, put a straw there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you see that in shows like all the time. Someone. They're like, does anyone have a pen? Give me, like, and I'm like, is that going to happen? Fear? That's one of my fears. I think I've seen enough times I probably could figure it out. But, like, is it the same fear where you've watched it so much, like, quicksand, right? Like, you grew up waiting for quicksand to happen in your life. I was like, I'm ready for quicksand. I've watched it enough times to know that it's going to happen. It's never going to happen. That thing's also probably never going to happen to me.
But then I feel like more recently I've seen things that are like, hey, quicksand is more common than you now think it is.
Where is it?
I don't know. Because I'm the same thing, right? Like you grow up and you're like, I'm ready for quicksand. And then you get older and you're like, oh, there's actually no quicksand. But more recently I've seen it's been like, actually, there is quicksand. So watch out.
Oh my gosh. Are they just trying to scare us? Right? Is this like... where they get on the internet and they lie.
Everything's a ploy to scare me.
Yes. Fear-mongering. Isn't that that's the word, right?
Anxiety issues, quicksand, and pens in restaurants.
Pens in restaurants to save people and help them breathe. I could do it, but yeah. I don't want to. You can figure it out.
I can't say that's on my list of fears, but maybe I'll add it at the bottom.
I say give it an hour and you'd be like, oh no, what if?
Overthink it too much and then yes. I'll be there.
I overthink a lot of things, which honestly is why I started a podcast in the first place. So now when I am, instead of being anxious and thinking about all the things that are not in my control, I just think about the pod.
Yeah. The distance from the floor to the shadow gate.
Yes. What is the distance? Can carry and swim. I have like, what if I just think about that stuff instead? And then all of a sudden I'm from point A to point B and I'm not anxious anymore.
That's really a good thing.
Thank you, goodish girls. Probably my anxiety. So right before Carrion wakes up, Saris tells him that if he doesn't wake up, she is going to tell everybody back home in Zilvaren that he was a bad lay. Obviously, that snaps him right out of it. He's like, don't you dare. So at least we know now what is going to help Carrion come back to life. His reputation is very important to him. So Saris is in an insane amount of pain, right? She's probably got broken ribs, and she is given Widow's Bane to chew on to numb her body. They are not to swallow this, though, only to chew on it, or they will be sick AF. They will throw up everywhere, right? And Faye take this, and they chew on it, but I can only imagine what this would feel like to a human, right?
Just like, I guess, yeah, numb.
Super drugs.
Yeah.
Girl probably feels great. Like, invincible.
Yeah.
Because, like, Faye take this
Which
on a regular
is good
basis.
Because breaking your ribs and then going through what she's about to go through doesn't sound very enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're not wrong. So she's feeling great. She took the Widow's Bane. Attempting to find their surroundings and figure out their next steps, they realize that they are surrounded by obsidian mountains. And here we go with the obsidian. The obsidian is like the rest of this book as well, right? We noted way back in a couple episodes that it's like super, super important. We are now surrounded by full mountains made strictly of obsidian. Their only option to get up the cliffs is to climb since they cannot swim.
Is there going to be a book called Obsidian in the future?
Ooh, I don't know. She has written book 3 and Kelly has noted, if I'm correct, that she started book 3 and she had to change the title of, I think, book 2. She had to change the title of book 2 because it was a spoiler. So maybe it was called like Obsidian or something like that. She didn't ever tell us the original title of what it was going to be because she said it would spoil it.
Interesting.
I don't know.
It's just like, as much as we hear Brimstone, mm-hmm. I feel like we hear Obsidian. So
we sure do. I think it's going to be a big part of book 2 still. Yeah. And I think I've said that before. Like, I do think it's going to be a big deal. So as they're looking up, it's also noted that it's literally snowing ash all across the sky. And they are now in Gilthry, right? So they like went through where everything was spit out. They're now in Gilthry. Everything is ash. Everything is dark. Everything is gross. Saris hears the chanting of the famous words that we have heard throughout the book, Anorath Mor, multiple times, right? Like, Anorath Mor. And she yells to climb the obsidian wall. And they make it up in a couple of minutes. They're, like, climbing the super sharp obsidian walls and up these mountains, right? So once they are up there, they realize that they are surrounded by an amphitheater full of Fae who are chanting and surrounding, they call it, like, a killing floor of a slaughterhouse, is noted in the book. And Saris finally understands why those words mean so much and why Fisher is so scared of them, because we finally learn that Loreth explains that Anorath Mor means release us. That's pretty, and we kind of talked about that in a previous episodes before, but it still hits hard. Just thousands of Fae screaming at you to release them after you burned them 100 years ago. Every day, all day, that's all you hear. So it's no wonder that he's like jumpy around those words.
Yep.
Super PTSD.
And a little bit crazy.
Yes, and a little bit mad.
How could you not be?
Mm-hmm.
That's like the ultimate form of torture.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. So Saris spots Fisher at the bottom, like down in the amphitheater, like on that killing floor, but he's really far away. Loreth is trying to figure out where in the hell are they? And a familiar face appears once again. Because he's like, where in the seven hells are we? And he goes, actually, this is only the first circle of hell, but I'd like to introduce you to all five. And out steps Harren. And if you don't remember who Harren is, he is the guard in the very, very, very beginning of the book that is trying to take, who takes Ceres to Madra when she is arrested and stabs her in the gut with a sword. And Kingfisher comes through the portal and saves her. So he was supposed to be dead, R.I.P. Harren, we think, or we thought. Not so much, yep. Right? He was, like, covered in silver. He was dying because Kingfisher was going to end him. Yeah, it was everywhere. And Kingfisher was going to kill him and was like, nah, Quicksilver's got this. We're good. And he leaves. So everyone, if you're like, why is he still alive? We do get that answer. So he looks super unwell. He is holding a dagger against Loras' neck at this point in time. And they're like, how can he be here? And it's also noted during this time, as soon as he appears, hundreds of feeders are starting to climb up the hill right behind them as well. So Harren flicks his hand. He's like, psh, and the feeders wait. They stop. And then this one, this part was really interesting to me because it says a vortex appears and he tells them to enter if she wants to see Kingfisher before he dies. Carrion and Lorith tell her to go. And she says, we're coming, Fisher. We're here. She sends through her mind. She's like, hey, we're on the way. And he says, Kingfisher's like, Ceres? He's like, do not fucking come here. Like, do not come here. But it was too late. They're already through. So I want to break this part down because, A, he flicks his hand and the feeders listen, which I think is wild. Like, how does he have any control over something that Malcolm is supposed to be in control of, first of all? Second of all, it opens a vortex, not a portal, not a gate. It says, and this is the only time the word vortex is used in the book. So it's like this weird, dark death magic kind of thing that he's got now. So not only is he back, he looks like shit, and he also has powers. So yeah, I guess like he's somebody's favorite.
The vortex is like the anti-shadow gate, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yes. It was real weird. I read it a couple times and I was like vortex. That's interesting. And that is the end of that chapter. It's a very quick chapter. A lot happens. And then we move straight into chapter 40, which is introductions. So now we're getting into like the nitty gritty of things of the, like on the evil side, I guess, essentially. So Ceres sees Kingfisher on his knees covered in blood and he has large cuts all over him. And he says, you shouldn't be here, little Osha. And they're still mind speaking. Right. So a lot of the time they're mind speaking. And then all of a sudden, Fisher throws his head back in pain. So he's like screaming. He's in a lot of pain. He's not doing well. And then Malcolm comes in with his super long silver hair and he says, greeting, friends. Welcome. We haven't formally been introduced. And then out steps Bellicon to his right and Madra to his left.
This is the moment where you're like, dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, right. Dun, dun, dun. Exactly. Did you see this coming?
No. I don't think I did. I think as a reader, you have to assume that Bellicon's going to be involved in something somehow you've learned so much about him and... he's just been established as like a big bad, but I didn't see this moment coming. And then I don't feel like I did think about Madra being part of like the climax of this story.
Oh, definitely. I was like, where did you come from?
Yeah. So no, I didn't. Did you?
Yeah. Madra in there was a surprise. I expected like Malcolm and most likely Bellicon. I expected a partnership of some sort, not a like sibling kind of thing.
Yeah, like
right?
Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah, and I did not expect Madra. So that was truly like a plot twist for me because a lot of times when I read these books, I can normally kind of guess what's about to happen. But this time I was like, oh.
Yeah.
What is she doing here? Right? And I thought maybe she was like, they like went and got her and they were like, hey, do you want to help us kill Kingfisher or something? Do you know what I mean? So, this was interesting. So,
I agree.
As Malcolm works out who is who, right? Ceres, Lorith, not Renfis. Renfis did not make it in time. So he is back with Everlane, which honestly is good. I want Renfis to be back with Everlane. I don't think that would have gone well if he was there. And Carrion is there and Carrion goes to introduce himself. And Harren hits him in the head with his sword. Bellicon tells him that the floor is bones and ash and it's all a graveyard and their magic does not work as well. So that is noted first thing. None of them have any magic. And Madra says, you should have let them try, brother. This lady's crazy. I still like her a little bit, though, but she's pretty wild.
Yeah.
She's like, you should have let them try and just use it to see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
So they say, human, fae, vampire. You think she is an ally? She's the one who stilled all the quicksilver. So Ceres is like, hey, like this girl, what is she even doing here? She did this all in the first place. And Bellicon replies that they always knew and they were upset at first, but it was only a little tiff. And Madra says she only did it since he sent a monster to kill her, to which he apologizes.
This was kind of weird to me. Weird in a negative way, but I feel like most of the time when you have like panel of villains that are working together, they don't talk about how they had a disagreement or mm-hmm. weren't getting along at some point. So that was different to me than the norm.
Yeah, not your average villain mm-mm. trio for sure.
Yep.
And then do we know what monster was sent to kill her? Was it Kingfisher when he came through that gate? Did she think that he sent her? Or sent him, right? Was she, when the portal opened and Kingfisher came through it and tried to kill and like left Harren as it was and took Ceres, was that Madra thinking that? But
no.
She says, I only closed the gate
right.
since this happened. So what happened? I guess it would be that wouldn't have worked because it was before it was closed.
Yeah. It would have had to have been something in the past.
So what happened? What monster? Kingfisher in the past? Another
Maybe we'll
thing?
Get a prequel one day.
Yeah, I have a question. What monster was it?
Yeah. Or that's maybe wild. That's something that will be revealed later. Like, what happened to that monster? Where is that monster?
Yeah. Was it Kingfisher's dad? Because that was technically before the portal closed. He was technically sent there to save the Dianthus heir, which we know now is Carrion. But, like, was he also sent there to kill Madra? I don't know.
I don't know.
I have a lot of questions for that one. I couldn't wrap my mind around it. So Lorth shouts. He's upset because they have been at war with Malcolm for centuries. Bellicon kind of laughs, saying that he's been feeding his brother's army this whole time. He embargoed the silver, which is the only thing to kill Malcolm's kind, and stopped sending resources elsewhere so that way they couldn't defeat Malcolm. So this time they've been fighting an uphill battle this like the entire war, and they had no idea, which honestly is pretty shitty if you really think about it.
Yeah.
It's really rough. So Madra then asks, she's like, she wants to see a little show, right? Which Malcolm says he did promise her. And he says, you've missed so much, sister. The fall of Gilthry was spectacular. And he goes, you were there, dog, right? You had a front row seat. And that was what Bellicon says. And Bellicon calls him a dog all the time. And Fisher's obviously pissed and retorts, right? So
The only thing you like calling someone a dog's pretty bad. I feel like the only worse insult is a worm.
Mm-hmm.
A worm.
Well, and does he call him a? I think he does it because it's of the Lupercalia, like the wolf, right? So instead of calling him a wolf, he calls him just a dog, like the domesticated version. So I thought that was interesting, but it is a pretty shitty line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Bellicon approaches Fisher and tells him how worthless he is and how, like, dare he speak to him that way. And he asks him to tell his friends what happened, but says, oh, wait, you can't. And then he hits him. Ceres notices that there are regular Fae in the stands as well. And this was just, like, a little side note. Like, she, like, looks over and she's like, I see regular Fae as well. Which, what does that mean? Like, it was other than the burned Fae of Gilthry, or was it the burned Fae of Gilthry, just not feeders, because they couldn't become feeders? I guess they were, but not all of them turned at the moment. That's right, which is why he burned them.
Yeah, and they don't all turn, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right, isn't it? Like
they were, most of them were turning, and so he was like, oh no, there's no time.
Yeah,
so guess.
Yeah.
That was my, like, when I was reading it, I was like, I think that's what it is.
I don't think I picked up on it the first time I went through.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I didn't really think about that. I'm not sure on that one.
Yeah, I thought that one was, like, something of note. So if anyone has any description of what that was or any thoughts, like, let us know, because I'd like to talk about it. So they asked the people in the stands who they want to tell them what Kingfisher did. Do they want Bellicon to say it? Do they want Kingfisher to say it? Who wants to tell the truth, basically? And he says, since Kingfisher is the one who killed them. And Malcolm is the one that says that for quote reference. Saris looks again to the crowd, seeing Faye in all black, but notices that their skin is burned and their faces are melted.
This is so sad.
Mm-hmm. So hundreds of Faye up there, all burned, all crispy. And then we just found out that he killed them.
I can't imagine being Fisher and already having faced this for so long. And now, like, the person that you love, that you don't even know if, like, truly loves you back, is seeing, like, your, to him, his, like, deepest, darkest secret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Plus another member of his pack, right? Like, Lorth is there as well. I think the only thing that would have made it 10 times worth is if Ren was there.
Yeah.
If Everlane was there, or if Daniel was there, I think it would have made it more hurtful for him.
I almost wonder if Renfist was there, he wouldn't have been as worried, because I feel like Renfist, like, will blindly follow Fisher no matter what.
Whereas yeah, that's true.
Lorth or, like, Daniel, maybe not as much. Like, they're not, I don't think, as forgiving of Kingfisher's actions as Renfist is, but...
Yeah. Yeah, Daniel will definitely call him out.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's an interesting thought. So he says, the last quote that happens that we see is wonderful. Hold on. Mess that up. Sorry. Edit here.
Okay.
Alyssa, edit here.
Got it.
Malcolm says, wonderful. The Fae of Gilthrei have spoken. I release you from your oath to us, Kingfisher. Go ahead, Kingfisher. Tell your friends all about the deal you struck with us all those years ago. So we know he's been under oath. We know that he could not say anything. And we know that if you have listened to the bonus chapters, right, and if you've listened to our episode deep diving into the bonus chapters, we learn that each person that has an oath, if they're about to break that oath or go towards the line of breaking that oath in any way, the consequences are different for each person. Right. We learned that. And again, this is a bonus chapter spoiler kind of thing. So if you haven't read it, like, pause here or accept the spoiler, is that, like, Taladeus, when he is on the edge of breaking his oath to Malcolm, he has, like, fire in his throat, essentially. And he, like, has smoke that's coming out of his mouth. We know also that Kingfisher, when he's close to breaking the oath, it feels like a noose around his neck, like he can't breathe. So now he is officially released of the oath. So he can tell the truth officially. And that ends chapter 40. Very short chapters, but, like, there's a ton packed in there.
That was my first impression, was like, oh, these are so short, but so much is happening now.
Mm-hmm. Yes. All of the things are coming full circle. All of the things are being tied back to each other, and everything is happening. So in chapter 41, we have Gilthrei, which we have heard of before. It's where they're at, the location that they are at, where they went through the portal to get to. It's raining ash there. There's an amphitheater, all the things, right? Fisher rises to his feet, and he says, mind speaks to her again. He says, it will be fine, Osha. So Lorth is obviously pretty upset about all this, and he's like, Kingfisher, like, what did they do to you? So I feel like the whole team has the same question, right? Like, they're starting to putting the pieces together in their minds as they're going along. So they're learning, like, this is where he was all this time. He was under oath, and now he's not. So we finally learned that the Horde had gathered at the gates of Gilthrei. Armies were in a battle with a smaller force because the feeders, they were marching. Fisher grabbed his best warriors to try and save as many as they could. And Bellicon says, the arrogance, 7 against 20,000. He really thought he could hold them back, right? Because we know in the Loop of Prelia, there was, like, 7 of them, and there was 20,000 feeders. Fisher continues, explaining that the Fae were in the streets celebrating a festival. The feeders swept through the city like locusts because it was so easy. Fisher says he left Ren and the others to find Malcolm to kill him on his own. He didn't find Malcolm, though. He says he found the bastard who killed his mom first, Bellicon. So he knew that those two were working together during that time. But then again, he ended up not being able to say anything because he came under oath.
Right.
So it says,
I can't imagine like not even being able to talk about that and know like mm-hmm. That's big knowledge to have, and then to just feel like you're being strangled if you talk about it or can't breathe. Mm-hmm. Wild. Yeah.
Again, if you ever meet a fae, don't ever make a bargain. It's bad advice.
Bad idea.
Don't do it. Never do it. And if you do, the devil's in the details, as the book says. So yeah. Careful what you're agreeing upon. Ugh. So it says, you think you can hurt me by airing out my sins. It was your bitch of a mother who was supposed to be the greatest oracle of our time, but she was useless. As soon as she was done giving birth to the brat I forced upon her, I slit her throat. And that's from Bellicon. Ugh.
Just what so horrible.
Yes. I wonder if it was hard to write these lines.
I don't know.
Like to get into the mind of that character and write that out.
Yeah, there's something about the like motherly figure that just has so much love and cares so much getting killed. Mm-hmm. It sucks.
It does suck.
It's very sad.
And then like to be killed by someone who has zero remorse about it at all in any way, shape or form.
Right. And then speaks about her that way.
Mm-hmm.
After the fact. Yeah.
Yeah. It's rough. But Kingfisher noted, he says, she never lied to you. Her life depended on it. And Bellicon ignored her completely and says, well, tell him about our deal. Like, tell him what we agreed upon here, right? He says he realizes Malcolm and Bellicon were allies working together before the blood curse. I don't think he knew that they were siblings, though, right? And he also didn't know about Madra until that day, till today. So he knew the two were together, some sort of allies. And then he decided to bargain for a few citizens of Gilthride that were still alive, and Malcolm promised a deal with a coin, the smallest amount of currency from Gilthride. So they're like all together meeting up, minus Madra. And then he says, hey, we're going to make you a deal using this coin, right? And as he's like explaining it, he says, when they flip the coin, if it lands leaf side up, Malcolm will call off the horde and leave the city without hurting another living thing. If the coin hits the ground, fish side up, he gets the city for himself, and Fisher would have to leave and battle with him at a later date. So those are very important words. And Bellicon mentions that Fisher's leaving out all the best parts of this agreement. Kingfisher was not allowed to touch the coin or influence how it fell. He also couldn't touch either of them as the coin fell. And until the coin toss fell and everything hit, he wasn't allowed to speak of the deal or that the two were brothers, which is where he eventually learns that they are related. Kingfisher agreed in a blood oath. And in the oath, it's not mentioned. It doesn't say like, oh, nobody can touch this coin or nobody can influence it. It just says Fisher cannot.
Yep.
So Fisher agrees, tosses the coin to the air, and Malcolm catches it. It never hit the ground, meaning that the bargain was never finished. And in this moment, we do also know that the quicksilver in his eye stills. What is
quicksilver
it doing?
POV.
What's it thinking? Please, quicksilver point of view. Please. I have so many questions about what it's thinking. I need to know. It's my dream. So
yeah, this one, I don't know what it would be thinking.
I think that when the quicksilver goes still, he has control of his mind for just a moment. That's my thought. Because usually when it's moving, swimming, whatever it's doing.
But why in this moment? Because he realized that the devil's in the details and he got...
No, I think he knew that. But I think the moment of his family... and his friends and his love finding out what truly happened.
Yeah.
I think it hit him all over again. Right? And I think that Quicksilver was like, all right, bro. I'm going to let you take that in for just a minute.
Yeah. And the Quicksilver seems to enjoy tormenting him from time to time as well. And he's mm-hmm. I mean, he's being tormented right now, so.
Right. And it doesn't necessarily pitch in when, like, others are doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
Because again, it's selfish.
It's only for its own amusement when, mm-hmm. when nobody else is, it seems like.
Exactly. I would be interested in a POV of this moment from even Kingfisher's side, right? Because he can tell us, like, what the Quicksilver is doing.
Yeah.
So I wonder what, like, from his perspective, what he's thinking and feeling. Probably a lot. So Fisher ended up torching the city because they were all transitioning into Malcolm's horde. If he didn't, since all of them were higher fey, they could have taken over completely. Malcolm was super upset by this, so he hid the coin at the center of his coliseum and filled the stands with the people that he burned. Wild.
Yep.
Absolutely ruthless.
Yep.
If Fisher could make the coin fall, then they would be free from the suffering and he'd have to meet him on the battlefield when Kingfisher wanted, right? And this is where things get kind of weird. So Madra walks up and she, like, caresses Kingfisher's jaw, admiring him. And Cyrus is pissed. She's like, don't fucking touch him. And then Fisher also, like, threatens Madra in this moment. And Madra's like, what have I done to deserve such attention from you? And this is where we, and again, full circle, Kingfisher says, you spayed my mate when she was a fucking child. You'll know no peace at my hands. No one will know. No one will care. So he's still really upset about that. And Cyrus was like, oh, I didn't even realize he was still mad about that one thing that I, like, don't really care about. I mean, I think she cares, but I think it was so normal to her and her life and her, like, what she was surrounded by that it didn't affect her the way it affected Kingfisher.
Yeah, she had made her peace with it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, 100%. A long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So she's like, oh no, you're still mad about that. Uh-oh. So Malcolm continues, and Fisher is working through the labyrinth to get the coin. One day, he finally made it. He made it all the way through. Alyssa, it took Kingfisher 55 years to get through the maze just to get to the middle. And 8 years following that, he tried to find the coin.
Yeah.
55 years walking through a maze that's constantly moving.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
And not, like, just a maze. Like, there's also other bad things in there.
Oh, in every corner.
Yeah.
And it's constantly rearranging itself.
You're also not sleeping. You're not eating.
Or drinking.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. Absolutely not. 55 years. And then another 8 trying to find the coin. So, and this is where Malcolm calls him my love. And this is where it gave me the ick. We talked about the ick. I know you said it's normal. It gives me the, and it, I want it noted on the record that it says Kingfisher and Cyrus both shudder at this. So I am not the only one who got the ick. They got the fey ick.
Yeah, but it's like, I stand by all the best villains. Are like darling or love or whatever.
Yeah. I think she meant to, like, make us say, ew. I think that was the goal.
And that happened for you.
Oh, every time. Even re-listening to it and reread, I'm like, oh my God. Ew. I can't.
Do you think Taladeus visited him when he was going through the maze?
I don't know. He might have. Like, or maybe, like, helped him a little bit. It doesn't, if I remember correctly in the bonus chapters, it doesn't say. It just says when they met in the middle that he would come visit him. So I don't know if he would or not. And he was only sent there when Malcolm wanted him to go there to hurt him in some way, shape, or form, right? So in the middle of the maze is where he's safe, technically. No monsters can get to the middle of the maze. Right. So my thought is probably not, because in the maze itself, there's a monster around every corner. So why would he need to send Taladeus in to do anything when there's always something that Malcolm can throw in there himself?
Yeah, that's
true. So I think it was like, hey, you made it to the middle. Great job. Now I'm going to send something in else to hurt you.
Yeah.
Would be my guess.
Yeah.
So I would say no. So Taladeus checked in on Kingfisher, obviously before the ground cracked open in a Quicksilver pool below the Colosseum. During this time, Malakon. Okay, that's fine. That's funny. That's a new name. Okay, edit that out.
There, No, that's their shipping name.
Malacan. It would be, would it be Madralicon? We're all three merging.
Maybe. Madralicon.
Madralicon.
Sounds like the ultimate big bad.
It sure does. So Madra and Bellicon mentioned their castles were shaking as the Quicksilver pools awoke. Kingfisher took one look at this pool and dove right in. And Malcolm says that he gave him so many chances to leave and end the suffering, but why after 110 years did he decide to leave in that way? We know why, but Malcolm has some questions, right? Because the choice was either they drink, like he gets to drink from Kingfisher or vice versa, and then he becomes one of the princes. But he chose not to. He chose to live in suffering and agony every day for over 100 years.
Yep.
So Malcolm's like, why did you leave in that way? And Carrion snipes in again. And he says, you bore him to fucking tears and he couldn't take it anymore. Good on you, Carrion. You're brazen, bro.
I first run through liked Carrion and his character. But like, if you don't love him at the end of, I guess it's this and the next chapter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then
you should probably listen to it again.
Yeah, you should probably re-listen.
Yeah. I feel like our podcast will help you like him if you for some reason didn't. But I haven't met anyone that doesn't like him by the end.
Pass.
She, like, by the end, I think she did. But during the beginning, she was like, what's the point of this character? And I was like, just read it.
I was re-listening to the first episode and she was talking. She was like, ugh, Carrion. And I was like, we are very different.
Yes. I even argue with her in that episode. I'm like, girl.
Yeah.
Look at all these things that he did. Yeah. He has helped Sarah this whole time.
She's like, I just for most of the book was like, what is the point of this character? And I was like, comedic relief.
Yeah. She texted me all the time. What is the point? And I was like, girl, just stop. Just listen to the whole thing. You'll get there.
Yeah, I
but he
him.
Helped her in the very beginning. We just didn't even realize it as when you're reading through the first time.
Also, like, even like speaking to the Quicksilver, he helped her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Why don't you just ask it? Why don't you just tell it? Yeah. Right? Yeah. So funny. He's the best.
Yeah.
Callie has mentioned a possible like Carrion novella at some point in the future.
Oh gosh.
It'd be the best.
That's what dreams are made of.
The deep dive Carrion novella.
I need some Carrion merch.
Yes, that'd be so good. A Carrion candle would be nice. Post bath.
Yeah. Otherwise, it would just stink. I think
post bath Carrion
water sprite moss Carrion.
Exactly
combo.
I love it. I'm here for it. One day it'll happen. One day. So Carrion snipes with that. Malcolm grabbed his throat, saying something seems off with him. Carrion jokes it was the moth from the water sprites. He's like, you're a little weird. And he's like, well, I did get a bath from these lovely water sprites. And Kingfisher jumps in. He says, you want to know why I went into the Quicksilver? And he's like drawing the attention to him, right? He left because the Quicksilver in his veins broke his sanity. We knew it would happen. And that is from Bellicon. Bellicon's like, you went insane. And Fisher says, it's not that. And he shifts his weight. Sarris notes, like, Kingfisher does not shift his weight just for fun. He doesn't, every move that he makes is, like, methodical, right?
Yep.
So he says, just don't move. He shoots the Sarris mind to mind. He's like, don't move. Stay exactly where you are. And he says, I went into the Quicksilver because I felt my father's sword calling to me and I knew I'd need it for this. He shifts to smoke, drawing solace from Sarris, and spins it up and drives it right into Bellicon. And he says, I don't need magic to mess you up, you fuck. And Madra lets out a huge scream and all hell breaks loose.
Hell yeah.
Wild.
Yeah.
So I thought this was interesting because we have another like sword to gut kind of thing.
Yeah.
Very full circle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sarris was stabbed in the stomach. Now Bellicon is.
It is.
I thought that was funny. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, justice is served. And that is the end of that chapter.
Yeah. That's
short
it.
Short and sweet.
Again, a short and sweet, but like,
mm-hmm.
Things are happening. Things are moving.
Yeah, exactly. So this next chapter, chapter 42, that'll cost you. That this chapter is one of the longer chapters at the end of the book. So this one does still have a lot of information, but it is a little, again, it's a little bit longer. So we know that Fisher stabbed Bellicon in the stomach. So he's like bleeding out with Solace, right? So Ceres is being restrained by two guards and is also being rushed by Heron. So Heron's running after her. The guards let her go and Heron thinks she won't really do anything. So Bro underestimates her once again.
Yeah.
And jokes on him, though, because she takes her dagger and puts it right into his gut. So again, a third stab to the stomach.
Of all the people to underestimate her, you wouldn't think it would be this guy.
Right? Again.
Yeah. He just doesn't think.
He really is. He's lucky, though, because he's a Madra favorite. That's the only reason.
Yep.
So, okay, here's a line that happened in this moment that I was like, it is noted by Ceres that Carrion was 5 feet away wielding Simon like he'd been training with the weapon for years.
Because he has.
But it's, remember in previous episodes, we were like, can he use a sword? Was he ever taught to use a sword? Like, did he forget how to use a sword? Bro is faking it. He can swim. I'm sure of it.
Maybe.
But, I'm sure of it.
Okay. If he's wielding the sword here, right, to save himself and his friends because he knew how to wield a sword, why wouldn't he have swam when he knows how to swim
to prevent going? I think he hit the water too hard. I think he got knocked out. That's my only guess. That's my only, like, receipts. It doesn't even tell us.
From the Shadow Gate at terminal velocity.
Terminal velocity. One thing Carrion Swift can't outcharm. Can we put that on a sticker?
Yeah.
One thing Carrion Swift can't outcharm. Terminal velocity.
Terminal velocity.
Rainbow.
With, like, stars around it.
Yes, exactly. Someone please make that.
Only we'll get it, but that's okay.
Yes. And well, people who listen to our podcast will.
That's true.
Yeah. We'll partner with somebody. We'll make a sticker one day.
Yeah. I'm going to make a Simon sticker first.
Yes. Oh, so cute. I want one.
Simon and a boot and a flower.
Yes. He's going to have so many boots in this next book. I can't wait.
At least three, probably.
I know that he is going to find his other boot. Four. I'm sure of it. I will bet money on it. So
we'll see.
Fisher yells for everyone to run into the labyrinth. They're going to go into the danger, right? And as he's yelling, he distracts Ceres and she gets a blow to the face by Heron. But the pain that she waited for never came because if you guys remember, she has Widow's Bane. Girl is literally invincible right now. Joke's on you, Heron.
Broken ribs, busted face, no pain.
No pain. Get it, girl. At this point, Bellicon is also hanging on by a thread, but he is not deceased yet. He is still alive, unfortunately. Solace is being removed, and Heron says something interesting. He says, the pieces of this game have been in play for millennia. You can't begin to comprehend. And then that's all it says, right? What does that mean? What game? What things? Millennia?
I think the game is the bigger picture here. I would assume.
Of like taking down the gods? Because like that's their goal, right? Is to like take down all the gods and be in power.
Yeah. I mean, millennia is a long time.
Yeah. And I'm like, what does that, what do you mean? But we don't ever find out what he really means.
What do you mean?
What do you mean? What do I do?
What do I do?
Yes, exactly. We have no idea. It doesn't ever tell us. I just want that line to be in the world because one day I would like an answer of what they're talking about. And we also learned that Madra gifted Heron eternity, right? So, like, is he's immortal? He can, like, from even the silver?
But yeah, that's my question. Even from the Quicksilver? Because,
yeah, it's in him. We know it's in him because she says that he's, like, silver,
basically. Right, but, like, what about Fisher?
Right.
Like, he's not... He's not immune from the Quicksilver, clearly.
Well, and I don't think that Heron is immune from the Quicksilver. Like, it's in his body. Like, bro looks rough, is rough. Like, it really took a toll on him. So maybe if he was granted immortality, right, or eternity from Madra, maybe this is, like, taking its toll on that, like, fighting the magic that she gave him. And also, when Fisher, he not only, like, when he went into the pool when he was younger, right, it was going to kill him. And then the Quicksilver itself saw potential in him. And then that's when he went to visit Bal and Mithin, right? For, like, I think it was the second time, first time maybe.
Yeah.
And then they helped him live as well. So, like,
was Heron immortal before the Quicksilver incident?
That's what I'm thinking. I think Madra had granted him immortality, but way, way before that. I think Heron has been around for a really long time.
Yeah, and isn't dead.
Right. And I think he's just, like, in a really bad spot now health-wise because of the silver. But the silver wasn't able to fully kill him. If that makes sense. Yeah, it is really icky.
Do you think he hears the Quicksilver? Do you think it speaks to him?
But I think it I think it speaks to him because I think it can't help it. But I think it's, like, I don't think it's meshing well. Like, not that it meshes well with Fisher, really, right? It, like, yells at him all the time and is really mean to him.
No,
but it, like, is him.
If there's danger coming with Fisher, it's like, run, go.
Because it is him. They're binded.
Yeah.
No, I think it's, like, constantly. If I had to guess from as much as I've attempted to learn about, like, said Quicksilver, I think it's, like, screaming at him and screeching and, like,
it's like water
saying
and oil.
Weird words. Yeah.
Like, just doesn't go. Yeah.
I don't think it sounds even, I think it probably sounds like gibberish.
Yeah. Right.
If I had to guess. Because it's not like, it's not accepting him.
Yeah.
It's just, it's like, and it was experiment. Like, you're supposed to be dead.
It's like the experiment gone wrong.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess. Who knows, though?
Yeah, I agree.
So the fight continues, and every move or stab he makes doesn't affect Ceres because, obviously, again, she has that Widow's Bane. So this is where, like, it's wild. Ceres finally gets her revenge, and she snaps his neck. Crack. Done. Does this work? It doesn't say it doesn't work. So I'm assuming it worked.
I guess.
But how do you go through this Quicksilver and have immortality, but then human girl snaps your neck and you're done?
I feel like in stories of such, chopping a head off or snapping a neck is always the end all for whatever reason.
Yeah. Like, for the feeders, you have to, like, fully remove the head.
Yep.
That's true. I do love that she had that power, though. She was like, bap.
Yeah. For sure.
I'm going to assume it killed him. I'm going to assume we finally have put Heron to bed.
Yeah, I agree.
Because, again, he underestimated her.
Yep.
And that's
more than once.
Mm-hmm. Yep. More than once. Sucks for you, buddy. So they're running further into the labyrinth, and Madra is stricken with grief. It notes that she was shaking as she ran towards Heron and Ceres. Madra's really upset. And we have no backstory on these guys, right? We have no backstory on their relationship or who they were or anything like that. But obviously, he meant a lot to her, like, to Madra.
Yeah.
Because she is devastated.
Yeah, it's like her right-hand guy, you know?
Yeah, but, like, to be stricken with grief, I can see her being pissed and being like, are you fucking kidding me? But she was like, no! Like, she's, like, shaking, right?
That's, like, the only person that she really probably, like, interacted with on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. Like, even though he's, like, a hired hand, I would assume he was, like, almost her hired friend, you know, like.
Mm-hmm. Or was it more than that? Were they involved?
I don't know. I never thought about that.
I'm just thinking about it right now. And I'm like, why were you so upset with, like, why do you have so much grief? What does he mean to you?
Maybe Heron was her side piece.
Maybe. I mean, I'm sure she got lonely. She's been in Zelvarim for a long time.
I reckon.
I wonder if that's a relationship that we ship. Heron and Madra.
I don't ship that. I ship Anya and Carrion.
Oh, I for That's sure ship Anya and Carrion. And honestly, like, I know since our last episode, I've been thinking about it. I do ship Loreth and Isabel.
Yeah, same.
I think that's cute. Renfis and Everlane.
Mm.
Oh, no?
That's two brother-sister to me.
Mm, all right.
That's fair. Maybe that's just me.
Renfis deserves the best of the best.
Renfis maybe deserves we'll get another character in his life.
Maybe in book two, we'll get another really awesome character. Say,
maybe there'll be a new character that he's like, oh,
yes. She can. Love for Renfis. I want to ask Callie that one day. Is Renfis going to find love? Write that down.
Like happiness.
Yes. Does Renfis get what he deserves? Finally.
Yeah.
Who knows? We'll
Please
see.
Please don't die. Please don't die.
Oh, absolutely not. No, I'm not accepting that. I'm not even letting that into the world. So yeah, she's really upset. She's stricken with grief. She's shaking, right? We learn that inside of the labyrinth is made of obsidian and it's super sharp. Before we went on to all the details of all of this, when I thought labyrinth and maze, I only thought greenery.
Okay.
In my mind, I was like green bushes that are moving around. I know that that's not correct. But until it said this line, I was like, oh. And then I had to change what it looked like in my brain. Right. And I mean, I've watched the movie The Labyrinth. Like that wasn't greenery either. It was all like stone walls and things like that. Yeah. Right. But I don't know. I just thought about Kingfisher like running through a green maze. It's like moving around. Obviously, it's not correct.
Interesting.
And that's
I wonder what like caused that for you. That like
every time I see like we see mazes, right? Like on TV or whatever. It's always green bushes.
That's interesting.
And so that's just what I thought of, like tall green moving bushes with monsters around the corner.
Yeah.
That's not correct. They're not like that. They are obsidian, they are black and they are sharp and really dark in there. Which fits better. It makes more sense. It truly does.
Yeah. Yeah. That's okay.
I don't know. It's just where my mind went. We learn also that the first 10 moves of the labyrinth are always the same. That's where you face the first obstacle, and then the route to the center is ever-changing. So they finally reach the first obstacle, which happens to be Morthil, which is a spider demon. I have questions. Here are my questions. Question number one. Where the fuck did Malcolm find a spider demon, first of all? How did he acquire this thing? That's my first question.
Mm-hmm.
Second question, why is the spider demon okay with living in the labyrinth? Does it want to escape? Is it trying? Is it comfortable?
I feel like if you're any kind of demon, you're going to be content living in a place of misery.
Yeah, but like, where did it come from? How did he get this thing? Maybe. There's a lot of crazy stuff out there, right?
A place like that.
Did he like bargain for this thing? Did he? I don't
know. He went and collected it up and dumped it in the maze. And the thing was like, I'm a demon. I'm happy. This place sucks.
Can we get a Morthil POV?
No, I don't want
it. Is that a request?
Take it back. I don't want it.
Take it back. I will read it. I'll read it and I'll tell you about it. Yeah. Right. Okay. Third question. Where does Kelly come up with this shit? Where?
That's why she makes the big bucks.
Where was she when she like wrote that, like pulled this thing out of her brain and was like, it is half fae, half spider. It's giant.
If you're coming up with Shadow Daddy love, you also have to be coming up with the bad stuff.
She did a great job. I just have I'm like, where did you like get this character from? I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know.
I want to know how scary they're going to make it on the Netflix movie.
I'm thinking like The Witcher like level.
Mhm. It's going to like be like super scary and it's going to like screech horror, and ick.
But yeah, like
it's going to be clicky sounds.
Yep.
Yeah. Ew. I can't wait. Mm-hmm. I'm excited. Mm-hmm. Okay. And also, here's the thing. So Saris notes that she's obviously freaked out by this demon, but she's used to it because she's like, oh, this is like wild. But also we used to have sand trap spiders. Hello, the size of dinner plates that would eat your fingers while you sleep. Out of all the things that we have learned about Zalarin. Okay, but in Australia, they're not eating your fingers.
Well,
are they? Australia, are you okay? Are you okay?
No.
Are you guys all right?
They have some creepy crawlies.
Crazy wildlife. I mean, they got like, what is it, like the orb spider or something like that? That's huge, but like the size of a dinner plate. But then, okay, and then I question, and I'm overthinking this, but here we go. She mentions the size of a dinner plate. How big is a dinner plate in Zalvarin? Do they get that much food? Because they sure don't get water. Is a dinner plate smaller? Like a little plate? No. Or is it like a plate?
It's a plate.
A regular
plate.
Their
portion sizes are just smaller.
All right. Just a regular plate that holds a good amount of food. And say, like, is the spider that big? And they just eat your fingers. Again, I go back to question number three. Where does Kelly come up with this shit?
That's pretty gross.
I had to really think about this for a while. I went on a tangent.
It's okay. I love a good tangent.
I think Mort Hill's a good character. As like a bad character.
Yeah, it's good.
I did not see Spider Demon in my Quicksilver bingo card when I was first reading it. So there's that.
I like it. Yeah.
So our wonderful demon Mort Hill cannot see or hear. It only tracks movement somehow, some way. I don't know how. I almost said echolocation, but it would have to hear for that. So I truly don't know how it does it, but it does.
Vibrations.
Yeah, something. So like when you're sliding against the wall, like it can't do that. But if you're like moving around, it can do it.
Yeah.
So they know that there are three exits to this place and they need to find the right one because it changes. And Fisher tasks Saris with finding the Quicksilver that's in the middle. So the big pool that broke open, right? So she can locate it pretty quickly and hears the souls of Gilthra at the same time. Saris asked herself an interesting question. She said Fisher had encountered this thing more than once. He faced it without knowing which path to take. Had it caught him? Had it? And then it's like dot, dot, dot. So that's a good question. Had it ever caught him? How does it know? Right? Like how many times did Fisher have to go through this and defeat this thing?
Sure, I think it for sure caught him.
Yeah, at least once or twice.
Yeah,
and then
sure.
did it kill him? And he was also like reborn or respawned or something? Or did Malcolm let him get to like the brink of death and then bring it back?
I think in my mind, just like reading through and continuing on, in my mind it was like Groundhog's Day, like you just respawned and like had to do it again. I don't think that's maybe what actually happened, but I think just like reading through it, that's kind of how I imagined it. Like, oh, he's been going through this maze for, you know, 50 plus years.
Mm-hmm. He got had to have died at least once.
He got to this point, he died. He got to this point, he figured out this.
Right. And then it, like the next day, it's like a brand new start.
Yeah. I don't know if that's true, but that's kind of how I, without going into deep thought about it, imagined it.
Yeah. I would agree with that theory for sure. So the plan is that everyone is going to slide against the wall to not let Mort Hill sense them, right, or find them. However, because of Carrion's positioning where he is at, it leaves him in quite the predicament. Kingfisher says, that leaves you sliding along the floor very slowly. Try not to lift your arms or legs too far from the ground. Get moving.
Now he's a worm.
He's a worm.
He's a worm. He's in a like loving scooting. Way, though, not in an insult way.
No, in the best way.
Yeah.
Oh my, I laughed so hard about that. He just has to like crawl along the ground. So Mort Hill eventually figures out that they're all there, and Fisher cuts off a Mort Hill leg. Carrion stabs it in the abdomen. Another gut punch. I just want to note that it's number four. Another punch to the gut. So the demon is now climbing the walls and stabbing its stinger into the obsidian, like aggressively, right? Like obsidian is like breaking, it's crushing. He's like stabbing it in there.
this is going to be so good on the screen. I cannot wait for this moment. And if they take Mort Hill out of the Netflix special, I will riot.
I don't think they will.
That's a huge part of it. They can't. They literally can't. They won't.
Horse ballet? Maybe not.
They better be in there.
Mort Hill will be there.
Has to be there. It's going to be so good. So Sarah stabs it one more time, and then Lorth finishes the job right by running a sword through its face. Bam. However, they only have a very small amount of time because it respawns every time you kill it. Yay.
Which?
Bright side, it will be smaller when it comes back. Downside, it will be faster.
So respawning, at least for it, is a thing, right? So maybe Fisher had.
Yep.
Okay. Killed by it before.
So here's my next question.
Okay.
We've been doing this for a lot of years, right? 55 years. Uh-huh. Probably going through this guy, right? Who knows how many times Fisher has killed it. Every time it respawns, it gets smaller, but it gets faster. How big did this thing used to be?
No. In my mind, it's just like full grown right now. So if you kill it, it'll come back. It'll be smaller and it'll be faster and then it'll get bigger.
Oh, and then it grows again. It's like a baby.
Slower.
Ah, that's how I see. It. Okay. That makes sense. I thought every time it like stayed a smaller amount and then got faster. Yeah, that makes your theory makes more sense.
But then my question is, how long does it take it to mature?
Yeah, an hour would be my guess.
A year? A day? A month?
Probably not very long. I would think not very long. I would say a couple of hours max before it's like full grown.
Maybe.
I don't know though.
Ooh. Yeah.
So as they continue, we see the question of what happens if they go into other enclosures on accident. Fisher states very bad things. What does that mean? What that else is out there?
That means you it's don't our imagination. Need to be asking more questions.
Right. And we don't get any more answers on that.
It's like the Wicker Woods. You probably don't want to see what's going on out there.
Yeah, I can grant you the gift of sight.
Nah, I'm good. Let's carry on.
Yeah, right. So Malcolm is changing the passages as they go. And it's because they're getting close. And Fisher can still, like, they can see the amphitheater at this point as well. They finally make it to the middle where there are, as we know, millions of coins lying on the ground in piles. The pack is now questioning where Fisher slept or ate or did anything while he was stuck here. And as Fisher is about to answer, Malcolm helps him out. He says, "You didn't, did you, my love?" Ick. So he tells him, so Malcolm appears out of nowhere, right, on top of a pile of coins. He states, "I may be a vampire, but I was once Fae. The magic I was born with still sings a dark chorus in my veins. I used it to craft this place, especially for our King Fisher, so that he wouldn't be plagued with such tiresome requirements as rest and sustenance. So long as he remained within the bounds of my playground, he needed neither." So he didn't get food or water or sleep or anything, but at least he never felt that, right? So he never felt tired, I guess.
But it would, I think that would just make you go crazier faster.
Why do you say that?
Because you just have no sense of time then, right? Like our days are structured generally around I wake up, I have breakfast, I go to work, I have lunch, I work some more, I come home, I have dinner. I go to bed, I sleep, and then my next day begins.
Mm-hmm.
Without, like, think about, like, how insane living would feel. Like, doing my routine without sleeping or eating. I wake up, I go to work, I work, I work, I work. I come home, I take care of my kids. I have no rest. And then I just do it again.
Yeah. And you're awake all night. Like there's no sleeping at nighttime either. You're just like doing something.
Right. Even if that's like your resting time, like his time not flipping through, like if he took a break in every day to like not flip through coins or not try and like get through the maze.
Mm-hmm.
If you're truly like not sleeping, you're just sitting alone with your thoughts then, which you could argue would be worse.
Right. Okay. That's fair. Yeah,
I think it's just another form of torture by removing those things.
Yeah.
It's like when people get shut in rooms without windows and they just leave the lights on all the time.
Yeah.
And like study like how long until you go crazy if you're just in a room by yourself with the lights on and you have no concept of time.
They are eventually in the middle. There's coins everywhere, right? We know that Fisher has not needed anything for sustenance. Madra and Bellicon both also reappear in this moment. And Bellicon is 100% healed. Dude's totally fine, which I'm sure is very frustrating to them to be like, shit. So Bellicon sees... Yeah, no, exactly. Groundhog Day once again. Bellicon sees the surprise on their faces and notes, "You really think you can kill me with a powerless sword? You can't kill any of us with a mere blade. We are the Trium..." Okay, so this is where I'm going to mess up this word. And I had to look it up because I didn't know what this meant either. The Triumvirate.
Is it Triumvirate or Triumvirate?
It might be Triumvirate. I knew I was going to mess up this word.
Okay,
I don't know why I can't. Yeah, it's something there. Triumvirate, something. And then he calls him a dog once again, right? He says, "Three crowns sharing one source. To kill one of us, you must kill us all. And that is no easy task." I looked this up because I did not know what this word meant. And it was the first time it ever comes up in the book. So it's not like a repeat kind of word. It is a group of three powerful or noble people or things existing in relation to each other.
Because it's three, I would think it would be triumvirate.
You're probably not wrong. Even when I was looking it up, I pressed the little sound button on Google and it told me a bunch of times. And then I was like, okay, got it. And then I didn't have it. So there's that. Okay. Anyway. It is what it is. At least I own up to it.
We try.
I own up to it. So I also want to note again that they have no magic in this place. But Malcolm, Bellicon, and Madra do have death magic to draw from. So they have some sort of magic in there, right? So because they were stuck between the Triumvirate and the terrors behind them, Carrion decides to use himself as bait by talking a bunch of shit to them. And he calls Bellicon out as a father because he gave away his own daughter, right? Bellicon sees right through it. He sees that it's bait. And he states that Everlane was only born to serve the crown. And if she dies, she dies. That's what it is, right? Yeah. End of story. Yeah. So Malcolm, in this point, runs out of patience and he floats down towards them. So he's like floating off of the hill of coins. And Fisher realizes something and he says to Ceres, "The coins are fake. They have to be. The original coin that Bellicon struck our deal with was made of silver. It burned Malcolm's hand when he caught it. He wouldn't even be able to stand on so many silver coins without them affecting him." He found this out in this moment, right? From what I understood. Can you imagine?
Could you imagine? I know, having spent so much time here and then being like, oh my God.
They're all
fake.
That's
what it is. Yeah.
Awesome. And right, because in previous chapters, it's told us that in the bonus chapter, he's flipped every single one of these coins dozens of times.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Insane. And then to be like, cool, they're not even real.
Yep.
Ridiculous. So the original coin would have had traces of Quicksilver in it. The people of this city believed it was good luck, so they thought it would bring them good fortune and connect them to the gods. And he asked, "Do any of these coins have Quicksilver in them?" Ceres thinks for a moment and realizes that these coins not only do not have any silver of them, they're not even made of metal. They're literally an illusion. They're all fake. They're all magic. Not even real coins. I'd have been so pissed. I can't even imagine how mad he would have been. Out of all the things to be mad about, I feel like that would have really been rough.
So frustrating. Yeah.
Yeah. So Ceres understands she needs to search with her senses and her magic for the one coin that has a Quicksilver in it. Carrion is still attempting to sacrifice himself by standing tall to Malcolm. He invites Malcolm to bite him and get it over with. He said, "Bite me. See where it gets you." Wild. Ceres is freaking out about this, and Fisher and Lorith have to hold her back from running to him. Malcolm is taking a very long drink of Carrion when he realizes something is wrong. And Carrion states, "You really should have let me finish introducing myself earlier. It's rude to interrupt people. My name is Carrion Swift, but there was a time where I was known as Carrion Deanthus, firstborn son to Ruick and Amelia Deanthus."
And the crowd goes wild.
Yay. Full circle.
So good.
A true star of a character, truly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's rude to interrupt people. Wild. So Malcolm, Bellicon, and Madra realize at that moment together that Malcolm was tricked into drinking Deanthus blood, and they panic, right? Because if you remember, the Deanthus family was the ones who were helping find the cure for the blood curse in the first place. So also during this moment, Fisher sends Ceres to find the coin, right? This is a great distraction. It worked. It's what they needed. So he's like, go, get out of here. So Ceres notes it's not in the middle with them, but somewhere in the labyrinth. So she has to backtrack. Thankfully, during this time, the walls are not rearranging because they need Malcolm to actually rearrange them with his magic. And he's currently occupied because he is currently really struggling because of the blood in his system right now. Ceres notes that the voices in the stands that have been chanting this whole time have also fallen silent. So it's finally a little bit of quietness, right? She can feel the coin and begs it to help her. She's like, hey, like, I really need your help. Please let me find you. Where are you? The silver asks for a bargain and she denies it. And it says, well, why would I help you if I get nothing in return? What's in it for us? Yeah. Honestly, like, she should have known better, right? Ceres tells the silver it's the right thing to do. And she said, because this is wrong, what they've done here, it's evil and you can end it. And it says, evil and good are two sides of the same coin. And it snickers. It made a joke. Please, Quicksilver, point of view bonus chapters, please. So they're funny. My dream. Yes. So it says we're the same side of the same coin. It's fine. Ceres begs it to help her once more, and Fisher it's like, hey, will you help me save Fisher? And it acknowledges that he is her mate, right? So everything goes silent, and the string that is like guiding her to this, it breaks. So she kind of loses hope for just a moment, and then it comes back, and it says, a small favor then. We will do it for a favor and for a restoration of balance and for love. She agrees. We do not know what this favor is. So there will be some Quicksilver in a coin, book two, that comes back and says, hello, I'm ready for my simple favor.
Yeah.
We both know it's not going to be a simple favor. I'm sure of it. Absolutely sure of it. I don't know what the favor is. We may know book two. Maybe we'll know book three. I don't know. She agrees. So the string in her gut pulls tight once again, and she is on the way. She finds Morthill's body, who has not yet respawned, thankfully. And the silver is like, hey, like, I'm inside. I'm inside this dude right here. And she is about to reach inside. I know, so gross. She has to reach inside its mouth and notes that her tattoos, like her god tattoos, are glowing metallic because she has out loud accepted officially that they are mates. And just as she reaches the coin from the back of Morthill's throat, there is a voice behind her demanding that coin. They grab her by the wrist and she turns around to find Malcolm standing right in front of her. End chapter. Insane.
Yeah.
Right?
Just so much. It's just, you know, the final big boss battle. So many things happening at once.
And we only have, like, three more chapters.
Yeah.
And then it's all done.
And I feel like the last chapter, too, is very, like, it's just wrapping things up or, like, setting things up for the second book. It's not like you're still in, like, this big scene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed.
Which it needs to be. But
oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. I definitely agree with that. I agree. Those are some good chapters, though. They still leave me with more questions, right? But I mean, they're very good chapters.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
I love it. I hope you guys liked it, too. We've come a long way since the beginning of this podcast and these episodes.
We sure have.
I'm very proud of us.
Me, too.
And we have, like, real listeners now that listen every week.
I know.
It's so exciting. And I love when you guys reach out to us, and I love when you comment on all of our things, and I try my hardest to make sure we comment back to you guys and engage with you guys because I care about you guys, and I am so grateful for our listeners and people who are following us and believing in us and supporting our pod. And we have a lot of really big things coming for you guys and a lot of surprises, and we're not going anywhere. We're here. We have some things changing soon, but they're going to be so good. Yeah. We're going to announce our next book on August 1st. It's going to be somewhat of a mini deep dive, for our next book.
Yeah.
And then I have a big book coming.
Yeah. I'm excited.
Good it's things be so coming. Much fun. Yay, big things coming.
And then Brimstone.
Brimstone. Yes. Comes out in November. All of these like releases are coming out. These special editions are on the play, right? There's a German edition. It's getting wild.
Did you see Kelly Hart's coming to the States for a few dates?
I did. Yeah. She's going to
Are you flying to Indiana? Is it Indiana?
I think it's Illinois, California, and I want to say like Michigan or Boston.
Operation Get Dallas on a Plane.
Yes. Okay. Get Dallas on a Plane, or maybe she'll add Orlando to her list.
Maybe.
But yes, I want to meet her so bad. I feel like I'd be like one of those like stupid super, like not super, but like I would sound stupid and I would be like stuttering as like a super fan.
No, you'd be perfect.
I don't know what I would even say to her. I don't even know. I have questions for her. So many. Maybe I could write them down.
As we've discussed, yeah.
Yeah, so many.
A whole list.
I need to go back. I'd have to go back through all the episodes and be like, okay, here's a question, here's a question, here's a question, here's a question.
Just play her the shorts, the clips.
Yes. Hey, will you just watch my TikTok, please? All of the questions are right here. You can just listen to them.
I love it.
One day. Yes. And I feel like that happens too with like musicians when they announce like a tour, they throw some dates out there, but then as they're going, they add more. So my hope is that maybe she'll add a couple more. She's already over here on this side of the pond, essentially, right? As I say it. So maybe since she's here, she'll add more things or she'll do like other announcements.
Perhaps.
That's my hope.
You never know.
Maybe. Do I want to? I can't fly all the way to California. It's too far. But I can go a little bit closer, maybe.
Illinois is not that far.
It's not that far. I could drive.
Or just maybe you can get a cheap flight.
Just a one day. I'm going to fly in. I'm going to meet her and I'm going to take a red eye home.
I love the idea of a one day trip.
Yes. Just jump in on the plane and then jump off the plane. Everything will be fine.
Yep. Yep.
I'll meet her and she'll sign my book. This book. She'll sign it.
Yeah.
And I'll treasure it forever.
I love that idea.
It's my dream. One day. Maybe just come to Orlando's a big city.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll invite her.
We've made lots of Quicksilver fans down here.
There's a ton of Quicksilver fans down here. Everyone that I talk to has to listen to it. It's a forced requirement.
Fans, if nothing less.
Yes.
If nothing more. Forced fans.
Forced fans. If they look at me, they're like, this is where I'm at in the book. It's fine.
Yeah. And I actually love it.
Better. Watching you guys. I did. James's brother finished it.
Nice.
And he was like playing video games with him. And I was like, where is he at in the book? And he's like, oh, he finished it. And I was like, give me those headsets. And I like put on the gaming headset. And I was like, hi, what did you think of it? Did you like it?
Who was your favorite character?
Yeah, right. So, and he's like very hard to impress because he reads a lot of books and does that kind of stuff and like listens to books all the time. So he said that he liked it. And I think that that's a win.
That's a win to me.
And told me he has to listen to my podcast now. We'll see if he does.
Another listener.
Another one.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Again, guys, we have a lot of really good stuff coming your way. So if you liked this episode, make sure to like and subscribe to our podcast. Make sure to check out The Goodish Girls, share it with your friends, and keep a lookout for some amazing things coming your way.
Great things coming soon.
Can't get enough of The Goodish Girls? Follow us on social media for sneak peeks at our upcoming episodes and bonus content.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.